As I got another rhyme, another rhythm for y'all to listen. I'm never quitting on my mission, I'ma roll with what I'm giving. Got some ambition, this new addition, filling positions. Looking at the void in myself and feeling what's missing. Better watch the way you're going, better go in the right direction. In the moment you stressing, but you gon' be counting blessings. And I know that for certain, keep on working, open curtains. Haters swerving, cause they ain't ready for your final version. Whoa. I'm never gon' give up, fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah.
You're listening to the Tom Ficklin Show on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, your home, a community radio.
Good morning, everyone. This show is simple as well as complicated, but really it's more simple in terms of protecting our children, in general, protecting our children, but particularly protecting our children during COVID. And you don't have to be a doctor, although we have Dr. Thomas Murray on the line. You don't have to be a minister, although we have Reverend Clayton and Reverend Perry. But protecting our children, this is something that is a concern way before COVID and way before the establishment of America. I mean, protecting our children, this is a human endeavor. Particularly, we're going to focus today on protecting our children during COVID-19. But I want to just start this way, and I hope everyone agrees that this is something that even if COVID never existed, we could have a show on protecting our children. So it's so important for us to focus strategically and tactically on the current medical issue and communal issue and protecting issue. But just keep in mind that this is not kind of a one-off. The business theme, protecting our children, is so important. And yes, it's during COVID, and yes, it's during really a global pandemic. But so let's just jump right in. My guests today are Dr. Thomas Murray, associate professor at the Yale University School of Medicine in the Department of Pediatrics, section of infectious diseases, and the associate medical director for infection prevention at Yale New Haven Children's Hospital. Also, I'm joined by Reverend Alvin Clayton, pastor of Walters Memorial AME Zion Church and cultural ambassador to the Yale Clinical Research Program, and Reverend Dr. Leroy Odinga Perry, Jr., pastor of St. Stephen's AME Zion Church in Brantford and cultural ambassador to the Yale Clinical Research Program. Dr. Murray, let's just jump in. We have 53 minutes or so, and this issue, as I say, is just on my heart. I was always thinking about the shows of what's my mindset moving in, and COVID-19 and mental health, important, but this is a key stage in our historical evolution, So as associate medical director for the infection prevention at Yale New Haven Children's Hospital, what does this position entail? I mean, how do you make the big bucks? How do we decide that you want to come back into work the next day?
Yeah, it's not about the big bucks. I promise you that in pediatrics. We do it for the reasons that you just mentioned, which is to protect the children. And in COVID-19, my role has really been to work with not only the hospital, but with community organizations and schools to think about the ways to allow children to congregate safely. Because as you mentioned, it's not just protecting the physical health of our children, but it's also protecting the mental health of our children. And that has been such an issue during this pandemic, and social isolation and the inability to come together is really problematic for children as they develop. So I've really tried hard to work with not only Yale New Haven Children's Hospital, but also schools and community organizations about how can we bring children together safely to allow them to have those interactions, but at the same time, protect them from COVID-19.
Perfect. Let me ask you to kind of drill down a little bit further on what you just mentioned. And Reverend Perry and Reverend Clayton are kind of used to my style. In fact, I'm going to encourage them to jump in more often during these next 45 or 50 minutes. And so you mentioned a little bit about what your position entails, but what about the focus? Help me to understand the focus a little further, because you may feel that you're repeating yourself, but for these kind of shows, some key points I just want to really just emphasize to the nth degree.
Sure. So just to give you an example, if an organization comes to me that has after school programs for children, and want to think about, can they have those programs during COVID-19? I don't see my job as to tell anybody what to do. I have two older children, so I learned a long time ago that doesn't work. What I do see my job is to provide accurate information so that people understand the risks and the benefits of different strategies, to try to correct any misinformation that's out there. That's particularly true around vaccination. And then to try to, you know, think about what works for this organization. So, you know, the CDC and other places put out lots of recommendations. You should do this, do that. I try to take that information and work with organizations like the Boys and Girls Club of New Haven to make that work. Like, what can we do with your organization and your physical space to allow you to bring kids together? And then if we decide, you know, at the height of the pandemic, it's not safe and we need to take a break, then we talk about what that means as well.
Excellent. Just, I want to talk about, well, a lot, just needless to say, but before we talk about transmissions and this variant, and whether there will be additional variants, I'm curious, Dr. Murray, infectious diseases, particularly today, you know, 2022, on this particular day, particularly in terms of young people, you guys are front page news. But you, when you got into the business and chose this area of medical specialty, I'm sure you didn't anticipate you being a celebrity. So, what kind of prompted you in your early career to kind of understand the importance of your current medical discipline?
Yeah, it's a great question, and for me, it was about finding a part of medicine where I could really impact the lives of children. And I was just, infectious disease has shaped so much of our history. If you go back through it, through different pandemics, and this is just another example that it was really interesting to me. And the other thing, to be very honest about it, is I'm not a procedure guy. And in infectious disease, we don't do a lot of procedures. We think a lot about patients and we think about the best medicines and to diagnose it. So that kind of drew me into the field. Definitely was not interested in the celebrity COVID part of it and can't wait for it to go away, which is why I try to help think of ways to prevent it, the spread.
Indeed. And on this show, we like to consider all of ourselves to be somewhat abolitionists in terms of abolishing some of these plagues and pandemics and particular collective personality prejudices, kind of making society a better place. Let's jump, if we could, Dr. Murray, in terms of this, though, people are hearing through the news the latest COVID variant and increase in transmission rates and effects on young people and children in particular. What are some of the factors that contribute to this, the rise, the qualitative and accurate reported rise of cases pertaining to young people?
Sure. So I think there are several factors that have gone into the increase in young people that we have seen. And just to provide a couple of numbers to put it in context, prior to this wave, the most number of kids we had in an entire month in the hospital was 22 in December of 2020. That's for the whole month. And that was our highest number for almost 2 years. This December, we hit 46. There was a day in January where we had 25 on a single day. And I haven't seen the numbers from this morning, but when I left Friday, we were at 97 admitted children for the month of January. So there really has been a substantial increase in children hospitalized with COVID. And I think there's a few reasons for this. One is that the Omicron variant is clearly more transmissible. So that whereas before, if you went out to eat or you went out somewhere in a public space and someone was further away from you and was coughing a little bit, you might have been okay. With this variant, it's pretty clear that there's a fairly significant risk of transmission if you come into contact with it. Vaccination does provide some protection, but as we all have to admit, it's not as perfect as we would like it to be from getting the infection. It's very protective against hospitalization, but the infection is part of it. And then the other thing for the kids, at least in terms of hospitalization, and this is just a guess, I'm just going to hypothesize or make a speculation based on the age, there's a lot more upper airway disease, a lot more like croup, that barky cough that the young infants get. And because their airway is a little bit smaller and gets inflamed, they often have to come into the hospital and get some extra support, some oxygen or some inhaled medications. So we've seen a big increase in the number of younger children that have been admitted for COVID over the last few weeks.
And if I might, Dr. Murray, I want you to paraphrase this, someone that's guest tuning in, and the question is, why are children kind of being more exposed and paying the price? And in layman's terms, why is that happening? Is it happening because of adults being this or not that, give me a headline.
Sure. I think a big part of it is just the sheer number of infections that are out there, right? Mm-hmm. So when the rates get to as high as they are now, unfortunately they're coming down, but they're still quite high, then that's gonna just increase the number of children that get infected. Coupled with the fact that many children are either not eligible yet for vaccination, the under 5-year-olds, and a lot of our, 5 to 11-year-olds, the vaccination rates aren't where we would like them to be. So it's a particularly vulnerable population to becoming infected with COVID. And when there's so much of it around, I bet everybody who's listening in has a friend or family member who's had COVID in the last month, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Reverend Perry, I want to bring you in early, just in terms of what we've just even chatted. There are a ton of questions that I always kind of have, but even just in what Dr. Murray has mentioned thus far, I just wonder if you had any questions or comments on what he's shared thus far.
I think that Dr. Murray raises an important question in terms of advocacy for these children. You know, I'm so happy that we have a pediatrician who can speak to the necessity and the need of being vaccinated at this early age. And when you think about the people who are advocates, there are very few adults who are advocating. The teachers are not advocating. The school system is not really advocating. They're worried about so many other issues. So other than community leaders, clergy and the School of Medicine, physicians in particular, we have a small pool to advocate for these young people. So what we're looking at is, because we're at Yale YCCI and this is what we do, we try to figure out how do we break through that? Hmm. How do we get more advocates? And so, it's very clear that mom and dad sometimes may not be the ones, or single moms may not be the ones. So we got to put on a full court press for grandma and grandpa and Uncle Junior, Uncle Bubba, Auntie May. We have to put on the full press to say, I've got my shot. We want you to get a shot because it's safe. And because not only will you help grandma and grandpa from any breakthroughs, but you'll make it safe for the whole community, for your classmates, for your schoolmates, for your community members, your church members. That's the task I think we're tasked with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Reverend Clayton, any comments in that regard?
Yes, Tom. Experts like Dr. Murray, who love the work, stated earlier that the Omicron variant is highly contagious. And people out in restaurants and you hear cough, it could be rough for children, especially. And what's great about him is that he's sharing the message, this accurate message that we don't so desperately need to inform the parents and guardians, the truth and the facts about the safetiness of this vaccine. I mean, of the vaccine. So I'm so appreciative to Dr. Murray and his comments so far.
Dr. Murray, let's say.
Tom, can I say one thing here?
Absolutely. You paid the price. You paid the price.
But mm-hmm. When we look at social determinants of health, and we look at, there are some barriers here. Not most of our children, I mean, there are some people who can go to their doctor, to their pediatrician, who will say, yes, it's safe, get the shot. But when you don't have a pediatrician, you don't have a primary care physician, and you're marginalized, that process is put on the back page. And that's something we have to deal with.
Dr. Murray, take me back. Are there like specific age groups? And I'm mumbling in terms of this question because what's going on in the back of my mind is, if I can be somewhat, I don't want to mention people's names, but I know of a young couple. Both of them are not convinced that they need to get a vaccine, and they're going to become parents.
Yeah, that's a common scenario. Yeah.
But so are there specific age groups among children that are more concerned to you as you kind of look into your crystal ball?
Well, certainly one group are the newborns and the neonates. And so there's excellent evidence now that there is no harm to the fetus by getting a COVID vaccine if you're pregnant. There's new studies out even in the last few weeks that it is very safe, and that when a mom is vaccinated, she makes antibodies that cross over and offer some protection for the baby. And so that's one population where we have had a couple of newborns get COVID, unfortunately, and be in our intensive care unit and require additional therapy. So that's one population. Among the vaccine eligible population, certainly our rates are low in the 5 to 11-year-olds. But I would say in general that anybody who has a child at home that has an underlying medical condition that makes them at high risk of getting sicker from COVID, those are the families that I would really encourage you them to get accurate information and to understand that this is a safe vaccine, and that those are the kids that we often see in the hospital, whether it's diabetes, whether it's asthma, severe obesity. And, you know, we have about 1/3 of the children who get admitted to the hospital are vaccine eligible, but have not gotten the vaccine. Mm-hmm. And when I look at that number, those are the kids that I want to keep out of I mean, it's great for everybody. There's lots of reasons. But man, in terms of keeping kids out of the hospital, it's those high-risk kids that I really would love to see vaccinated.
And Reverend Perry, I saw you make a note there, and my instinct tell me that the note might become manifest through some wisdom uttered through your mouth.
No, I was thinking as Dr. Murray was talking that maybe part of the problem that we're dealing with is information. Where do parents go? Like, if I say I have a child and I want to get him vaccinated, do I take him to the emergency room? I don't have a primary care physician. Do I call the hotline, or, you know, do I make reference to someone who may have gotten there? I mean, how can we get this information out and make it available so that people can say, here's where I can go to bring my child to get vaccinated?
Well, I know some of the schools, particularly I'm familiar here in New Haven, and other school systems are rolling out a process, but you're right, it's just the further beating of the drum and making it easy for folks to kind of bring their young person in. Dr. Murray, as we talk about it, we've done a few shows in this regard, and as I say, I've done the radio show's been 5 years, and I've done public access and other things, but never have I discussed a topic where the current event, there's a history, there's a current event, and then there's the unknown about the future. So it's difficult to kind of communicate these conversations because I might have to contradict myself next Monday, and people are being pilloried and feeling yin and yanged and pulled from pillar to post in terms of what's truth and what's not truth and what to do. But on the topic of the variant, I wondered if you want to share a little bit about your prognosis for the future about future variants, and are we seeing any even new symptoms or even long, I was reading an article last night about long-term effects, even if you think you've recovered from this Omicron, but are there any new, on the topic of the Omicron variant, are you seeing any new symptoms or long-term effects that we didn't see earlier in the pandemic?
Yeah. So first of all, I will agree with you as someone who said something on Monday and had to walk it back on Wednesday early on. So I've become very reticent to make predictions, but I will give you some of my best guesses. The first thing is that one of the scary things about COVID as a parent is that the long-term effects down the road, we really don't know, because it truly is a brand new virus. And so that's something that we all have to keep in mind. And a certain percentage of kids will go on to develop this long COVID, which you may have heard in the news, which it can be fatigue and headaches and maybe a bit of a brain fog. And whether there are specific variants that make you more likely to have that or less likely, I don't think we know for sure yet. I don't think we have enough information. The other thing that we are watching extremely carefully is there's a well-described now syndrome in kids. That's a systemic inflammation. So it's an inflammation of your whole body. The kids get very high fever. The worst effect of it is it can affect your heart and cause your heart to not function the way it should. So these kids can get very sick, and it typically happens about 3 weeks after the initial COVID infection. And whether you had, you know, an asymptomatic mild infection or a serious infection has nothing to do with whether you're going to get this. And it's still very rare, but we don't know who gets it and who doesn't. And so the Omicron variant now, we're getting to that 3 to 4 to 5 week period where if it's going to be a big cause of this syndrome, we're going to start to see it. So I know here at the Children's Hospital, we're on very high alert for these cases because we don't know if this variant is going to be more or less likely to cause it. And those kids end up in the hospital and can become very, very sick.
Reverend Clayton, I just want to mention and have Dr. Murray perhaps reinforce that you had a recent opportunity for people in the Bridgeport area, correct me if I'm wrong, was it this Saturday to kind of get the COVID vaccine, to get the vaccination?
Yes.
So we're in January and have been urging people for the last year to get the vaccination, but there still is a need for folks to get the vaccination.
Well, we're working YCCI sponsored or help us to sponsor a vaccine clinic last Saturday. Mm-hmm. For children 5 years of age and up. Mm. But we will also have another vaccine February the 12th from 10 a.m. to 12. The follow-up to that, and also if you have not been vaccinated at all, you can come and get your vaccination, and we will give out flu vaccination as well. We just got to do all we can to help keep our children and the adult community as safe as possible.
Dr. Murray, I guess I want to give you a chance to say amen to that.
Yeah, and I just want to follow up something that Reverend Clayton said that's so important, and that is the influenza vaccine as well. Prior to Omicron kind of taking off, we were starting to see an increase in influenza cases in the area, and then Omicron kind of came around and squashed it. But as Omicron starts to go away, there's certainly a chance that influenza can pop back up. Hmm. So the COVID vaccine, critically important, but the influenza vaccine also very important, again, especially for children and adults with underlying health conditions. We want to keep people out of the hospital as much as possible when we can avoid it safely.
I was wondering, Dr. Murray, when young children get the vaccine in the clinic, like for example, when they go back for the second, you think it's safe for them to get the flu vaccine at the same time?
I do. And I think, you know, everything we do in pediatrics is all about risk benefit. And we never want to recommend anything that we do not think is safe for kids. So the good news, especially for the 5 to 11 year olds, is the dose of the vaccine that they get, it's the Pfizer vaccine, and they get 1/3 of the adult dose. And when you compare what happens to the kids who get the vaccine to the adults, the immune response or your body's ability to fight COVID is the same. But because it's a lower dose, you get less fever, you get a fewer percentage of kids get some of the effects that many of us who got the vaccine have gotten. And so I know there's probably people listening who've gotten the vaccine and felt pretty miserable after that second dose, who are like, I don't want to put my kid through that. What I would say is there's a pretty good chance your child will not feel the same way you felt and will not have the same severity of the side effects.
Dr. Murray, on that point, just to drill down a little further, if you would, in terms of which vaccines that, in your opinion, are currently approved for the younger folks.
So as of right now, there is only the Pfizer vaccine, the mRNA vaccine, is the only approved vaccine for children 5 and up. Moderna is applied to the FDA or in the process of applying, but it has not yet received approval. So right now there's really only one choice for the younger children. And again, it's 1/3 of the adult dose, and it has an excellent safety profile.
Dr. Murray, could I ask you one question, Tom, if you'll allow me, Tom?
Please,
if a child tests positive for Omicron, do they get the vaccine or do they get something else to treat this infection or virus?
Great question. So for certain children with very high risk conditions, with things like cancer or where their immune system really has a problem, there are some therapies that we can offer. There is an antibody that the child can receive. Unfortunately, like everything else these days, it's in very limited supply. So it really goes to those children and adults over 12. You have to be over 12, who are the highest priority, the most at risk for severe disease. For the child who has COVID and then the Omicron and then recovers, we would still recommend the vaccine. It doesn't have to be right away at that point because they've got some protection from having been infected. But for whatever's coming next, we would still encourage vaccination of those children within 2 to 3 months.
Reverend Clayton, this is a commercial break. Share with folks again your upcoming date, because it's just so important for people to realize that you may think that the train is left, but no, the train is going to stop. It's going to stop for you. You can get on board. So you have an upcoming event.
On February the 12th, at 445 Broad Street, Bridgeport at Walters, for a vaccine clinic. We will be giving out vaccine for persons 5 years old and up. We'll be vaccinating those who need their second dose and those who have not been vaccinated at all. And at the same time, we will offer the flu vaccine as well.
Excellent.
Tom, do you have, is it possible to put the flyer up? Is that possible at some point?
If Harry, I don't think Harry, our station manager, has it, so I'll have to be guilty. I'll definitely post it, voluminously through all the social media platforms. But I don't think Harry has it, and that would be the way for it to happen. So I apologize about that because I realize it's a very nice picture of you and your nice robe on the stand. We'll try to put a billboard up between now and tomorrow on 95 and 91. Dr. Murray, we hear much about and again, I really appreciate your mention that you made a statement on one day and then a few days later had to kind of amend it. But in terms of this community immunity, is there such a thing? Should we just dispense with even that phrase in terms of herd immunity as it relates to the current rate of vaccinations? What's your thought about that?
Yeah, this is it's another great question that you can hear lots of different answers to, because I think to tell the truth, I don't think anybody knows for sure. So the idea of herd immunity is that if enough people in a community get infected, then and then become protected, right? So you get the infection, so now you're safe for a period of time, then the virus runs out of people to infect, because everybody's already had it. And there have, early on in the pandemic, there were countries who thought they were not going to do any mitigation strategies and kind of allow the virus to run its course. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of problems with that strategy. One is the number of people that you have in the hospital can overrun your healthcare system. And we've certainly learned about the limitations of our healthcare system because of the number of patients that have come through our doors over the last couple of years, not just here in New Haven, but nationally. And the other thing that we've learned is that, you know, there are certain infections that if you get it once, you're pretty good for the rest of your life, right? Measles is a great example of that. You get the measles vaccine or you get measles and you are protected. That's why you don't have to get boosted for measles. COVID, unfortunately, is just not that virus. We clearly know now that there are variants that have emerged that can reinfect people who had a different variant before. And so, you know, if it was just one kind of virus, the idea of herd immunity works really well. But as we continue to learn about this one, it seems like it can continue to evolve to give us a hard time.
Or I was just thinking, Dr. Murray, as you were speaking, I'm involved. I remain in communication with a lot of folks that are fervent about not getting vaccinated. And I was thinking about them just as you were speaking, as in terms of for children's, separate from part of whether we ever achieve herd immunity. And from your standpoint, what would be the ideal rate of percentage of young people that should be vaccinated for us to have any communal protection at all from anybody?
I mean, a common number is around 80%. That's mm-hmm. that's a number you'll often see. But again, you have to be honest when you say that nobody knows what the magic number is if it's out there. I just think it's important that for those who are hesitant about vaccination to really understand that what we all want is for this thing to go away in the form that it's in now. I don't know that we're ever going to get rid of COVID, but we can certainly get rid of it in its pandemic form. And the only way that's going to happen is if we take steps to reduce the spread. And vaccination, while it's certainly not perfect, and I'm not here to tell you that if you get vaccinated today, you'll never get COVID again. I'm not going to lie to anybody. I try to tell it like it is. But boy, if you get vaccinated today, you have a much, much less chance of ending up in the hospital and certainly an even greater chance of not dying from COVID. Mm. And so that's a pretty strong argument for adults. And I know for children, the other argument that people say, people like me have been telling everyone COVID is milder in kids. I've said it for 2 years. And therefore, if it's mild, you don't need to get vaccinated. And so I'm not going to walk that one back. I will stand by that. The majority of children do pretty well when they get COVID-19. The problem is it's not all of them. And the problem is that those kids can spread it to adults very easily who can become quite sick, whether it's other people, kids at school who are high risk, whether it's elders at church, whether it's other congregate settings where people come together. Anytime, you know, people have to eat, so the masks have to come off. So there's lots of organizations in the community that have events where there's food, and those are places where COVID can spread. So even if the kids, for the most part, do well, it's certainly not all of them. And unfortunately, they certainly can spread the infection to others who can get very, very sick.
And just as Reverend Perry, just as Dr. Murray was speaking, my mind went back to your opening comments about everyone has a role to play in this, whether you think you're sick, well, dying, whatever, everyone.
Absolutely, Tom. And I think that I think Clayton was going to mention something about some young people in his family who had gotten COVID. You want to tell him about that, Doc?
Yes. A 3-year-old caught COVID. I don't know if she got it at school, but the mother, the grandmother, received COVID from the child. But also, we had members in our congregation, a lady who has underlying health conditions. She did not want to be vaccinated. Then she didn't want her children to be vaccinated. And now, when you talk about bringing the children to be vaccinated, and she's have a hesitancy, and at the last minute, their whole family has COVID. So we have to make sure that we keep spreading the news about the safety, the safetiness, and how effective these vaccines are, and they will keep us safe, and they will keep us out of the hospital for the most part.
Yeah, Tom, when I think about coming up as a child, I didn't have a choice whether I got the vaccine or not. You know, whether it was polio, chickenpox, measles, I did not have a choice. I just did it. And it just amazes me that we have so much resistance. And yet there are mandates for this in our school system. You have to have a physical when I was going to school, and you had to have these vaccinations in order to be a part of a class. Now it seems like, you know, it's we got so many anti-vaxxers and so many people who are trying to downplay the importance, and the risk seems to be so great. I just do not understand it. Even with the clinic that Reverend Clayton had in Bridgeport, we were looking for like 125. And I'm not sure we got anywhere near that. But the problem was, is how do we shake the trees? How do we make this so important? Dr. Thomas, when you said young children, it may not suffer in the same way or as much. It may be mild for them. For some people, you're right. This gives them an out to say, well, why get it? If it's just going to be a mild flu or cold symptoms for them. But it looks like the statistics are showing that a lot of these children, there are many of these children who do get sicker, who do have.
And some die. Some have died.
Yes. No, I completely agree with that. And we don't always know which kids are going to get sicker. And, you know, the bigger picture from my perspective is that we all want this to end. We want to be able to congregate without masks. We want to be able to come together as communities without fear of getting disease. And the more people that remain unvaccinated, the more people that are going to be vulnerable to this virus and are just going to delay that. For me, you know, in my personal experience, one of my jobs is to work in the hospital taking care of children with infectious disease, including COVID. All it takes is to spend an hour in the ICU, the pediatric ICU, and see children in the ICU with COVID. And, you know, if you have to vaccinate 100,000 kids to keep one kid out of your intensive care unit, so be it. Because that's not that kids don't belong in intensive care.
Since we have about 15 minutes, I want to move along a little bit, but I don't want to overlook any of the importance. And I do want to talk about mental health for a second. But Dr. Murray, if we can shift just a little bit in terms of adolescence, and also booster shots for 12 years old, because even some of those folks might have gotten one, might not have gotten one, might have two. But now we're talking about booster shots for them. Any thoughts in that regard?
Yeah, I was really, as someone who has a 12-year-old, I was super excited when they approved the booster shots for that age group. And the reason for that is because while two vaccines definitely help keep you out of the hospital and do reduce the risk of getting an infection, that third dose in terms of preventing getting the infection makes a big difference. Again, that everybody knows somebody who will tell you they've been boosted and had COVID, but almost the vast majority of the time, those are mild case, very mild cases. So it's just another way to stay healthy, and it may, you never know, but hopefully will provide some protection should another variant pop up down the road. So I would encourage anyone with anybody in a household where there is a member eligible for a booster, regardless of age, 12 and up, adult, to really think about it, because I do believe it offers substantial benefit.
Tom, may I ask a question, please?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Dr. Murray, how much time should it be after the person 12 year old and up received the vaccine before they get their booster?
I believe it's 5 months is the current recommendation. So there's a lot of those kids who aren't quite eligible yet because they haven't quite hit the 5 month spot.
We had to wait 5 months. We were in the first study, and we were not able to get the booster until it was like almost a year later, because they were still rolling it out. It had not been approved, but once it got approved, you know, because we were in the study, we were able to get it. And I also want to say that when I just came back a little while ago from St. Martin, and, you know, I was wondering about the COVID there. And one of the things that was mandated was before you could get in the country, not only did you have to have both shots, you had to have proof of having had a booster shot, which I thought was just, I felt great about that. Riding the plane, I'm thinking everybody on this plane has gotten the booster, and everybody in this plane has to wear a mask. And when we got to the hotel, everybody had to get their temperature checked. They had to get their hands sanitized, every restaurant, everywhere you went. So I felt kind of safe. If this is going to be the new norm for tomorrow, then we need to start right now getting people ready for this, because it doesn't look like this is going to go away. It just looks like it's going to be a variant after a variant after a variant. So we might as well buckle down and do the right thing, as Spike Lee would say, do the right thing.
Indeed. Dr. Murray, on that thought, talk about the, again, your future crystal ball from a medical standpoint, from a research standpoint, from I'm not sure whether you said your prayers this morning or got down on your knees, or whether you lit any candles. But how do you kind of what's your internal guide telling you about the future in this regard? Compliance and respect.
I will do my best, but acknowledge upfront the limitations of my ability to see into the even past lunchtime these days. but what I would say is this. I think Omicron is on the decline. It is going to be a slow tail. So we are currently averaging somewhere between 14 and 18 children in the hospital every day with COVID-19. We were in the 20s before that. So we are down a little bit, but we've been fairly steady in that range, and I expect us to be there, and then it'll kind of drop down to 10 and then to 6. And again, back in the summer, we went 3 weeks without any children with COVID-19, just as a comparison. So I do think we're going to see a slow decline of Omicron. I am almost certain there are other variants circulating. But what I think we have to remember about that is not all variants turn out to be scary and bad. There have been other variants of concern that people were worried about and then kind of never made it, so to speak. Other variants took it over. So I think, you know, that's critically important. We can't forget about the other respiratory viruses like influenza. There's another respiratory virus that infects kids, called RSV, which tends to infect preschool kids, and it's usually in December. But this past year, we saw a huge increase in the summer, like completely out of season. And then it was coming back, and then Omicron kind of got rid of it. So I know here at the Children's Hospital, we pay very close attention to the RSV and the influenza numbers, because those are reasons kids come into the hospital. I think with respect to compliance, we got to be honest, right? Like when you go out and about these days, depending on where you go, there's a lot of people around who aren't wearing masks. If you like football and watched any of the football games over the weekend, there are 60,000 people plus congregating. In Green Bay, they had to have masks because they were freezing. But in some of the other places, probably not so much. And so I do think, you know, society is kind of moving away from some of the risk mitigation strategies. And to be totally honest with you, I totally get it. We are all fatigued. We are all tired of having to remember our mask when we go out in public, or to ask someone to repeat what they're saying because you couldn't hear them because of their mask. I have to wear, when I work in the hospital now, I wear these N95 respirators. I don't know if anybody's ever worn any of these. You put this on for 4 hours and you've had enough of COVID, for sure. So, you know, the way to accelerate all of that is for more people who are eligible for vaccination to get vaccinated. That is the way to help make all of that go away. I can envision a scenario where there are yearly booster shots. I'm not the first person to say this. Many have said it, kind of like flu, where they try to predict the variants and then create a shot each year. But I think we're going to have to see. I honestly didn't expect there to be a variant like Omicron. That was something that came out of left field.
Gentlemen, we have about eight minutes. And if we can just chat a little bit about this phrase, mental and emotional health, and how it affects young people. And that's obviously a seminar. I mean, there's degrees in this. There are people that are teaching this and being involved with the emotional and mental health. But it is a concern, so I want to guess if we can touch upon that a little bit during this show, about physical and mental health of our children. Dr. Murray, would you like to start?
Sure. So I'll start by saying, you know, as an infectious disease doctor, I do not proclaim to be a mental health expert. But as a pediatrician at heart, I have witnessed huge increases in the number of children, especially adolescents, who are in our emergency room with mental health issues like severe anxiety and depression, thoughts of suicide, really unfortunate, higher numbers than we've ever seen before. And again, I don't proclaim to be an expert, but I certainly think the social isolation that we've all experienced over the last 2 years, keeping kids home from school, canceling after school programs, limiting congregate settings. It just really has impacted all of this. So it's a real problem. It will be with us long after the virus is gone. I think there's no question about it. And the sooner we can bring kids back together safely, the sooner we can reestablish those social connections, things like churches, after school, Boys and Girls Club in New Haven does so many amazing things. Just we've done everything we can to try to keep those things going safely during the pandemic, because the kids really need it.
Yes, I think it's, I think that in this psychological, emotional, and mental state, you also have to look at the educational state that these children are going through. Especially if they're already marginalized or they're in special ed or special alternative schools, this is going to wreak havoc on their educational growth, as well as it's going to stunt their emotional, mental, and social growth. So it is, you know, it's the quicker we can find some amenable solutions or ways that we can do this. It's interesting that, you know, this pandemic has opened up doors for us to find other ways to communicate. You know, like, I never thought I'd be doing Bible study in church on Facebook and on Zoom. It's just unbelievable. And that reaching people now has become a hybrid approach. So it looks like we're going to be moving toward a hybrid approach with schools, as in we already started, and with community centers and with our young people. The more programs we can, you know, Yale has an intern program for young people. We're trying to work on a program, an exposure program for young people, so that we can train them, we can pay them, we can teach them, we can educate them. And I think that's what we as a society, all of us, must come to grips with and try to find ways of doing that.
Reverend Clayton, because I'm thinking, other than us teaching all the young people how to play the guitar and music, what are your thoughts about kind of showing the love to the younger people?
This is a strain on our young people mentally. So many of our young people have worked all summer to get ready for the next football or basketball or swimming season. And unvaccinated, this is almost impossible. So we are encouraging parents and guardians. I want them to know that if these kids are fully vaccinated, then they can continue with some of these activities that will help the children in their normal growth cycle.
Jens, we have about three more minutes, and I'm thinking, Dr. Murray, if we can just dispense real quick with this myocarditis issue. It seems every person that I talk to that's a resistant, they throw this one statistic out at me, in spite of its rarity, as being the determining factor in their philosophy. And here I am, I realize I'm getting a little judgmental. But just for the record, would you like to talk a little bit about the myocarditis and what it means and how prevalent it is?
Sure. So first of all, we've seen no cases of myocarditis in the 5 to 11-year-old age group. Those few children who get it are typically adolescent males between 16 and 25. Even in that group, the risk is 0.01%. So it's about 1 out of every 10,000 vaccine doses given. And the children, I've seen some of them in the hospital. They get ibuprofen, believe it or not, is the treatment of choice, high dose, and they respond very, very well to therapy. So it's an unfortunate complication, but it's very, very rare, very treatable, and we have seen none of it in the 5 to 11-year-olds. And the last thing I'll say quickly is that, you know, Yale was one of the first places to report this as an adverse effect. And what that said to me, I was not part of that group, but they were my colleagues, is that the system is working in terms of looking for adverse effects, and that we're not trying to hide them or sweep them under the rug or make them up. We go looking for them. And anything, I'm part of the group that reports. If somebody calls me and says, could this be related to the vaccine? My answer is always yes, report it. And let's see if nationally it's a problem, even if we think it has nothing to do with it. So again, as a pediatrician, it's the safety of our children that come first. And the myocarditis, it happens. It's very, very, very rare. In the whole population, it's like 1 out of more than 100,000, even more than that. Mm-hmm. But even in the adolescent males, it's 1 out of every 10,000 doses and none in the 5 to 11-year-olds.
The theme of the show is protecting our children during COVID-19. As we kind of conclude, I want to give everyone a chance to, we maybe have 90 seconds, but Reverend Perry, let me have you start, and Harry will play the music of Dr. Murray, and that means we're being kicked off, but protecting our children during COVID-19. Dr. Perry?
The only way we can protect our children is to advise them to take this vaccine, and that the vaccine is safe. We have nothing to fear from the vaccine. We have more to fear from the people who are not getting the vaccine. And that is the message. And a lot of our young people know that even before their parents. I have a lot of young children that I know who want to get the vaccine, but it's the hesitancy is not with the children, it is with the parents. So we need to work on getting this education out for this population.
Reverend Clayton?
Yes, I again want to thank Dr. Murray for so clearly sharing with us the importance of vaccinating our children. And I want the audience to know that these vaccines are safe, effective, and they will protect our children.
And you're inviting people to come to your hacienda when again?
February the 12th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Walters, 445 Broad Street, Bridgeport, Connecticut, for coronavirus vaccine and flu shots.
And they can walk in, right, Clayton?
Yes, sir.
And folks are not limited. Do you have to be a Bridgeport resident, or are you accepting people from out of town?
Long you're a state of Connecticut resident or you work in the state.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Dr. Murray, I give you the last word.
I just want to say thank you. Thank you to you, and thank you to Reverend Perry and Reverend Clayton for bringing attention to this, and just to encourage parents who have questions to really reach out to places to get accurate information, whether it's their healthcare providers or their community leaders, so they can have the right information to make the best decision.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
As I got it, I'm another rhythm for y'all to listen. I'm never quitting on my mission. I'm gonna roll with what I'm giving. Got some ambition, this new addition, filling positions. Looking at the void in myself and feeling what's missing. Better watch the way you're going. Better go in the right direction. In the moment, you're stressing, but you're gonna be counting blessings. And I know that for certain. Keep on working, open curtains. Haters swerving, cause they ain't ready for your final version. I'm never gonna give up. Fall down, I just gotta get up, yeah. Cause this is my road, lights, camera, action, I'm ready to go. I'm never gonna give up, fall.